Not showing anything on YouTube.
No, we're good.
We're good on YouTube? Yep, I can't see it. We're going. Hold on. Sec here. What's up, everybody? Welcome to ATL Sports HQ Live, the podcast for the fans, by the fans. This is episode 3, and we are truly live this time, guys. I'm Bowling Bob, Bob Lancaster.
What's going on, everybody? I'm ATL Phil. Follow me everywhere at underscore ATL Phil.
I'm Derek Clemens. Follow me on Twitter at D Clemens.
Be sure to follow the site, atlsportshq.com. And if you're finding it now on YouTube, where we are live right now at the ATL Sports HQ YouTube. We're also looking to get a new name for the podcast. We really, really, really need some suggestions. You can send it to ATL Sports HQ on Twitter. And what we're going to do is we're going to give you a prize. We want to give you something for naming our podcast. We got a nice Game Time Radio t-shirt to give away. So let's make sure, you know, to send us some suggestions and let's get a really cool name for this podcast. So you guys ready to get the show on the road? Let's do it. The first topic is going to be the Atlanta Falcons. I mean, we got to start off with them. They lost to the Cleveland Browns on Sunday, 28-16. Derek, what went wrong?
Everything went wrong. They just looked terrible. And like, you could just tell that they weren't prepared for that game. And they took them lightly. Like, Bob, you were saying it all week. You said the Browns scare you the most after this little stretch. It just showed. I mean, they just came out and looked flat.
What did we score? Second possession? Second time we got the ball, they got to score a touchdown.
And then after that, it was over. The defense looked terrible. The offense looked terrible. Couldn't get a rhythm going. And I mean, Devondre Campbell, he said stuff talking about that it wasn't the same going into practice. It wasn't the same preparation and stuff. And you can just tell. And I mean, that's something we could not afford at this time of the season. And it could really hurt us. And it's probably hurt our playoff chances. And I'm very doubtful that we recover from this loss. And I think we'll finish the season probably 9-7 and miss the playoffs and then be ready for next year.
Phil, what do you think went wrong, man?
Yeah, it looked like they came in there like, oh, it's the Cleveland Browns, blah, 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 blah. But the Cleveland Browns came into that game 6-2, 6-1. So 3 games, they were obviously right there. So obviously, I mean, this is the National Football League. It's not like college when you have D1 going up against like a little FCS school. No, all of these guys are professionals. You cannot afford to overlook anybody. Like, come on now. This probably absolutely shattered their playoff chances. You know, every single week on Game Time Radio, I was like, oh, you know, it's a long season. It's a long season. It's a long season. They're going to get it together. And then they went up to Washington and got it together only to have their worst performance of the season. So it's just really disappointing. A really good Matt Ryan season going to waste. Really good rookie season from Ridley going to waste. A really good Julio Jones season going to waste. Another year of Matt Ryan's prime going to waste. He's getting older. So, you know, it's really disappointing. I see them stumbling after this. I mean, I don't think they'll recover. I think they're going to stumble down to 8-8 now.
You know, I don't like to toot my own horn, I guess, per se. But, you know, the last 2 weeks I've sat here and I've told you that the game that scared me the most was this game against Cleveland, just strictly for the fact that, you know, Cleveland isn't as bad as their record is. They've had a lot of, a lot of close losses this year. And then, they just haven't been able to put it together in the fourth quarter per se, but it just, you know, you tend to overlook a team like this. And then I also mentioned last week that, you know, Nick Chubb coming back to play against an Atlanta squad might put a little extra, you know, pep in his step. And boy, he ran crazy. You know, the longest run in Cleveland Browns history. I don't know if it was for a rookie.
NFL
history.
Yeah. It was, you know, just an unbelievably poor performance, you know, and I've been listening to sports radio all week, and that seems to be the common theme from the players who, you know, have been on sports radio that, you know, they are admitting they overlooked this game. I heard that they had a pretty terrible week of practice. You know, just the intensity wasn't there, and they just went in thinking it was a cakewalk. And you can't do that. You can't do that against, you know, a quality rebuilding young team that wants to make a name by beating teams like the Atlanta Falcons and keeping them out of the playoffs.
You can't do it against any team, especially in NFL.
Yeah, after the Washington game, I think they thought they arrived. I think they thought they had everything figured out, and
they got comfortable.
But that's what just made it more unreal is, you know, you just got done playing the most complete game of the year against Washington to go and then play the most incomplete game a week later.
Complete opposite way.
Yeah, yeah. Nothing flowed. I mean, the offense just never got going. Even from the, you know, from the offset, I think it was a 3-and-out on the first possession. And that's, you know, I don't think the Falcons have had a 3-and-out on the first possession that I can remember this year. That seems like they've always gone right down and, you know, either, you know, put points on the board early. It's been more the defense letting them down, but the play calling, red zone offense again this week was poor, which is amazing considering, you know, the how good the red zone offense has been for, you know, have flown for the last, I mean, 5 or 6 weeks now. And then, you know, went right back to having the same questionable calls, especially within the 5-yard line that I noticed. So, but yeah, it was just, you know, all around very, very disappointing. But I agree with you guys that the playoff chances are dwindling now. Going to be tough to make up for this one. But second question is, at 4-5 and with remaining matchups against Dallas, New Orleans, Baltimore, Green Bay, Arizona, Carolina, and Tampa Bay, what games should be W's, and will that be enough to get us to the playoffs? What you think, Phil?
They'll beat Dallas. They'll get smoked down in New Orleans. They'll beat Baltimore. They'll beat Green Bay. They'll beat Arizona. They'll lose to Carolina. And then watch, they'll have a chance to do something against Tampa Bay. And then all of they'll fall flat again.
So what that'll put them at 9-7. You think that's going to be enough?
No. You're going to need 10-6.
Yeah. What you think, Derek?
I mean, it's hard to tell. It really depends how we recover from this week going into Dallas. I mean, Dallas, I mean, they're an okay average team. We should definitely beat them, even going there. We're going to Dallas, right?
No, it's in Atlanta.
Yeah.
In Atlanta. So, yeah, we definitely should win. But, okay. I mean,
Dallas is coming off some wins, though. I mean, you know, they've got the momentum on the other side, especially with the, you know, the big Monday night win against Philly, which kind of surprised me, which was actually needed for the Falcons' chances, you know, for the playoffs. You know, that was a big win. Keep Philly out of the wild card picture.
It's going to show a lot of the team's character. It's going to show their real character, how they respond.
So you think they're going to be? And, you think they're going to go 9-7, or think they can think?
Everyone listening, shoot us your prediction in the chat. What do you think the final Falcons record will be?
So I'm going to go that I actually agreed with Phil completely. I do think that they are going to win everywhere but New Orleans, and I don't think they're going to beat Carolina. But it's so funny because at the beginning of the year in Phil's article, I said 9-7 and don't make the playoffs. And I've stuck with that all year. I definitely didn't see the Browns loss coming. So, but you know, that at 9-7, I think everybody in Atlanta is going to be rooting for my boys, Seattle, this Thursday, because we need some Green Bay losses if the Falcons are going to be anywhere near the playoffs. I think the two wild cards right now are Green Bay and Carolina. So, you know, we're going to need Green Bay to lose some, and then, you know, I think the Falcons are going to have to pull off a win against either Carolina or New Orleans. They normally split the series with Carolina, so that one kind of scares me a little bit. And, you know, I just don't think that they have the offensive matchup, you know, to beat New Orleans. But They should squeak by Dallas this week. Baltimore, I'm not as sold on Baltimore at all. Green Bay, that game is going to be huge. I think that game truly is going to determine whether or not they make the playoffs or not. So Arizona is horrible. I mean, horrible. That, I mean, the Browns look like Super Bowl contenders are compared to Arizona. So if they lose that game, they don't deserve
Super Bowl contenders Sunday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, you know, we all know this is a huge loss, you know, and there's just, you know, nothing they can do about it, but maybe this will wake them up to show that they, you know, got around the table now. It's just sad that they put themselves in a position to have to do that. So we'll see. I mean, not a good week. I hate to start off with a story about us losing to the Browns, but you know, it was just such big news here, you know. But let's get to the good stuff though. Atlanta United put in some work over the weekend, taking out NYC 4-1 on aggregates, and now have to face the Supporter Shield champs, New York Red Bulls. When and where is leg one, and give us a game preview, Phil.
All right, so leg one won't be until next Sunday, the 25th, at 5 o'clock in Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Yes, 2 weeks from now, because we have some international games, and, you know, MLS has a whole bunch of international breaks, because if we didn't have the breaks, then we would be missing players like Miguel Almirón, Tito Villalba, Joseph Martinez plays for his team, too. So those international breaks. Oh, and Darlington Nabi, Brad Guzan, they play for Team USA. So those international breaks are definitely crucial, but it does create this kind of like, okay, well, what do we do now feeling with 2 full weeks off? So, yeah, New York is the number one seed. New York Red Bulls, of course, because we just took care of New York City. So New York Red Bulls are the number one seed. We all know what happened the last day of the season. So that means they travel here first. And remember, away goals are the tiebreaker. So we have to play some stout defense. And we got to hold them. We got to try to hold them to one goal. They're a very good team. Obviously, they're a very good team. I think we're more talented. I think we can win. It's not going to, you know, it's not the end of the world that we have to face them. Yes, we were rooting for Columbus, but it's not the end of the world that we have to face them. It's definitely attainable. We're the more talented team. They're very talented themselves. Of course, they have Bradley Wright, Phillips, and company. But if we come out and play our game, we're healthy now. We have to watch out for Darlington Nagby. He got a little banged up Sunday, so hopefully he will be okay. But we're healthier than we were in our two matchups with them this year. If anybody forgot, they beat us this year 3-1 in Mercedes-Benz after some very, very, very controversial refereeing decisions. We went up from 2-0. They took a goal away, and then it just went down from there and ended up losing 3-1. And then just the absolute fall flat up in New Jersey about a month ago in the 2-0 loss. So we've never beaten them in our 2 years. They might be the only, I'm pretty sure. I'm 98% sure that's the only team we haven't beaten in the league. They have had our number, but the game starts 0-0, and you have 180 minutes to make something happen.
Do you think it's better that we start at home against this team? I know that, you know, obviously with the aggregates, but do you think that, you know, having not beat them, that starting at home is going to be, you know, good for us instead of having to play them in New York and getting an edge on us?
Well, yeah, I was ready to say no, but now that you did say that, you know, if we can get out, if we can jump out, get that first goal at home, get the crowd behind us, get that momentum, get that energy, it might be good for us. Mm-hmm. But you always want to know what you have to come home and do. So that's the point of having the second leg go to the better team.
Yeah, I like that. I like that more when I think when you're the favorite of getting to go back home knowing what you're down. But when you're considered the underdog, and then like you said, you know, it's a team that we've never beat. You know, I just think I agree with you. We're having that home, you know, the crowd, you know, shout out to all the fans out that have been coming out the games. That, you know, I flipped it on and, you know, it was a packed house. And that's so good to see around here. You know, a lot of our teams, you know, even when it comes to playoffs, aren't filling the place up. I think they showed it 5 or 10 minutes early on ESPN. Everybody was in their seat. It was fantastic. The atmosphere, you know, especially, you know, you probably want to tell us you were there live. So, you know, what was the atmosphere like for that game?
It was incredible. It was absolutely on fire. You know, everybody was there. Everybody was engaged. You know, in Atlanta, sometimes it's like people just there to be there. No, the stars were out. Everybody was wearing their jerseys. Everybody was standing and cheering all the way up to the 300 level. It was just a sight to see. And nobody could say Atlanta is not a sports town.
All right. So I guess the main thing is, can we beat the Red Bulls?
I think we can. I'm probably setting myself up for disappointment, but I think we can do it. And then obviously, this is the real MLS championship, if we're being honest. These two teams are two of the three best teams in MLS history right here. This is the MLS Cup. Whoever comes out the West, either Portland or Sporting Kansas City, they'll have to travel out here, and I don't see them being able to compete with either of us.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it would be great that if our newest team to the city could be the one that brings the first championship here, and you know, just gets that curse off of Atlanta sports, because you know, it only takes one to, you know, to set the tone. And you know, as weird as it seems, you know, how can baseball or football or basketball relate to soccer, but it's still, you know, in sports considered a major championship, the MLS Cup. So it definitely puts your city on the map, you know. So but you know, let's first things first, you know, before we start talking about the MLS Cup, let's do working against the Red Bulls, and again, get you know, go back to New York with a lead, because if they don't have a lead, they're done.
It's short rest. It's also short rest. The second leg is Thursday.
Yeah, I think that was when I was looking. Yeah, it was Thursday. So yeah, you know, it's again, you know, if they're down going into game one, there's just no chance whatsoever that they're going to go to New York and you know, pull off an upset. So hopefully they'll score goals in bunches, and you know, we'll have a huge, huge lead going to New York, which would be nice.
What's your final goals prediction?
That's hard. You know, for me, it's hard to see that we could beat them just because they've had our number, their top. But I don't think it's going to be a blowout by any means. I'm going 4-3 Red Bulls.
I'm going to go 5-4 Atlanta.
You got a prediction, Derek?
I'm gonna let y'all take that. I just say you gotta win,
Atlanta, buddy. That's all good. That's all you gotta say. You'll be popular to say Atlanta. Yeah. All right, let's get to the Atlanta Hawks. Theme of this week seems to be inconsistency. Blown out against Detroit 124-109, a close loss against LeBron and the Lakers 107-106. And then a loss against Golden State, which surprisingly was closer than, you know, we all thought it would be. But, you know, that they were all so without two of their, you know, biggest players. So why is it that day to day this can seem to be a team that can hang with teams better than them, but other times can seem to just be overwhelmed? What you think, Phil?
It's just the youth. You know, we're a very, very, very young team. We just don't have the talent to hang around with a lot of other teams. And as we see, if we get off to that bad start, it just snowballs. They don't have the confidence. They don't have the ability to stay with it. They miss one shot and they're like, they get a little timid. They try to do too much, as we see with a lot of them, especially Bazemore. They try to get it all back at once instead of playing their game. Friday was probably the worst they looked all season. But then they come out, they go to LA, they jump out 9-0, and they compete and fight the whole game. And if it wasn't for some questionable calls and then some bad mental mistakes, looking at you again, Kent Bazemore, they would have got out of there with a win. Uh-huh. So it's the youth. And you know, you gotta in the NBA, you gotta learn how to win. You gotta learn how to compete, and it's gonna take some time.
seems like Kent, there's no middle ground with Kent Bazemore. You either get superstar Kent Bazemore or trash Kent Bazemore. There is no middle to him, which drives me insane about him, because I know what he can do when, you know, as a complimentary piece. But it just seems like when he wants to take when he tries to take the star role, it's just a little more than, you know, you appreciate him trying, but we know what his limit is, and so he probably shouldn't go above that limit. So, but what do you think, Derek?
It's just part of the process. There's games where they're going to look better. Pete was the best, but then there's going to be that time where the real us comes out, and you can just see the talent, how it's different from the other teams. I mean, we have a new coach. It's a new system, new players. We're building around a new player, and I mean, we're young, and it's just going to happen. I mean, I agree with Phil. The game Sunday was, I mean, I think it was probably the best game this year. They competed all the way to the end. They found themselves down, but they fought back and competed to the end and had a chance to win that game. If, I mean, Trae Young would have been able to score that last bucket. But I think it's just part of the process, and it will continue to be like that. We're going to run into the rough bumps, and sometimes we're going to look great and win a game two and then go off. Maybe Lucas is going to – that's just how we should expect it to be throughout the season in this rebuilding year.
Yeah, I think my issue is I just think the wrong people are scoring. I don't think we've won a game yet where Jeremy Lin's been the leading scorer. So that
garbage time.
Yeah. But there was some positives. I think the Laker game, Alex Lynn was fantastic. So, seemed to really, really do a great job, down low. You know, it all goes back to being a young team. I agree with you two that, you know, these types of things are going to happen. I really would, after watching the games that we've had so far, Trae Young has just been a little too inconsistent at times. So I'm kind of still holding out hope that, you know, John Collins, someone youthful running the court with him, that's, you know, going to improve the both of them, instead of, you know, putting veterans out there that don't move as quick as he does. That's, you know, you watch him with the ball, and he's just, you know, everything happens so quick. You know, you can tell he's, you know, just a young kid that can run all day, and, you know, we don't quite have the team speed yet for them to catch up with him. So his passes seem to be just a tick ahead, which causes, you know, quite a bit of turnovers and stuff. But, you know, I just want to see him compete. When you're a rebuilding team, and, you know, with a new coach, I just want to see you hang. I don't want to see you give up. I thought the Detroit game looked like they were defeated. I mean, and it seemed like, you know, I think it was Stanley Johnson had, just like a career game against them. And then Andre Drummond, he had a fantastic game too. And but it seems like our biggest losses are teams that run us up and down the court all game long. So, and again, I think that's something we'll pick up, you know, once John Collins is able to come back. But we got Denver, Indiana, and the LA Clippers next three. Any chance we can stop the bleeding, Derek?
I mean, it's hard telling. I mean, you don't even know how they're going to come out and play. I think we'll be able to give one. I think we might be able to give one in Indy.
What you think, Phil? You think we can get any of these next three?
Yeah. I mean, I think they could win in Indy, but they also could get blown out, and they could win versus the Clippers, but they also could get blown out. So, you know, I'll save that for next segment.
What were you saying, Derek?
To go on what you were talking about, Trae Young inconsistent. I mean, really, I think the inconsistency is coming just from, I'm lagging, but coming just from his three-point shooting. And, I mean, that was his most prized gift coming out of college. I mean, that's what everybody looked at. So, I mean, I guess really that's not a bad thing, because he's contributing on different aspects of his game at a way high level than any of the rookies are right now.
He's like second in the league at percentage of field goal percentage at the rim or something, like on layups.
He drives. when he drives, he's as good as it gets. I mean,
yeah, he's second right now in the league. Behind the 7-footer.
Yeah, he does all the things right going towards the basket that I always hated about Dennis. So, so I'm glad about that. I just think with the 3-point shooting, you know, I mentioned this last week that he's still far behind the 3-point line, and so he comes up short on his 3-point shots that I've watched. And I'm surprised that in practice they haven't worked on getting him closer up to the 3-point line. I don't know that I can remember him shooting like that in Oklahoma, but that's the one thing I really, really noticed about him this year is that, you know, again, he's a good, you know, 3 or 4 feet behind the 3-point line every time he takes a shot.
I mean, I just think that's just part of his game. Like, I mean, in college, I've watched a lot of him in college, and I mean, shoot, he was doing that every game.
Uh-huh.
He's just pulling up. I mean, it's just, I think it's his confidence level because he knows he can make that shot. So when it starts to fall at a consistent rate, it's going to be deadly.
I think once he doesn't have the weight of feeling like he needs to be the leading scorer and calms down enough, and because we clearly know he can run the point, sharp passing, like you said, he's able to drive to the rim, make plays happen. That's what I want in a point guard. That's what I thought we were missing at the point guard position. So, you know, it doesn't really bother me that the 3-point shooting isn't happening for him. But, I think that the next three, Indiana, I don't think we're going to win. They seem to be a really, really improved team. So if one of the wins does come, you know, I think it's going to be either Denver or the Clippers. I would have to pick the Clippers if any. But boy, I just with this road swing going out west, I really would like to see them, you know, get at least one win.
Yeah, and there was years even when we were good that we would go 0-5 on our West Coast trips. Mm-hmm. It's hard, you know, it's hard for them.
We never matched up well with the West Coast team.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're starting. You got to figure. You know, you're starting this. You know, it was a 10:30 start time here for us for Golden State, and it was 10:30 for the Lakers, right?
Yeah. No, it was 9:30.
Yeah,
9:30. Yeah, starting off later than you're used to. And this is some of those rookies' first West Coast trip, so they're getting. You know, it's going to take a little while to get the feel of that time change and everything like that. You're a little bit sluggish, so.
Throw away the injuries and the circumstances. If you would have told me we'd go to LA and we'd go to Golden State and we'd come out a combined -8, I'd be like, oh, wow. I mean, that's great.
I agree. I thought, you know, even though I think we all knew that they were going to lose, I thought that they competed well against Golden State. So, even though their best game I thought was against the Lakers, I was surprised the most and, you know, happy with their play against Golden State, because even with Steph and Draymond out, there's still a lot of talent left.
You still got a top 5 player and a player that can go absolutely nuclear.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to the Atlanta Braves real quick. Ronald Acuña named the National League Rookie of the Year. He had 27 out of 30 first place votes. He had a fantastic year. Him and our Juan Soto of the Nationals had very, very similar numbers. So I was a little worried that they would split it, that they would, you know, make it the co-rookies of the year, which I hate. I think the last time I saw that was Jason Kidd
was Grant Hill.
Grant Hill. The last time I ever saw co-rookies of the year, and I hated that because I thought that was kind of forced. So I was really happy that, you know, the writers, you know, voted him, you know, very majority wise. I thought he had a fantastic year, especially in the second half. He's pretty much the reason in the second half why we even went to the playoffs. So that was a great thing. He becomes, I think, the 8th Brave Rookie of the Year. The last one was Craig Kimbrell, first position player since Rafael Furcal. So he has a bright future for this team. You know, I'm excited for him to lead the way for us. So, he's going to be a staple here for a while. I'd like to see them, you know, put him with, you know, another superstar out there in the outfield. So, it's going to be interesting to see him around for a few years. So it's nice to have that, you know, superstar for us again that you know, really haven't seen, you know, since Freddie Freeman, you know. But what do you think, Phil? You think, you know, deserving?
Oh, for sure deserving. And I think definitely the Braves record and his impact on the team is what gave him the nod over Johan. I forgot that. I got his name mixed up. But how do you say his name?
Oh,
Juan Soto.
Yeah, huh? Yeah. He, like I said, I pulled up the numbers for Soto right before the podcast, and I mean, it was crazy how similar there were. But I think it all came down to team impact.
Yeah.
Nationals didn't make the playoffs. The Braves did. So, you know, when it comes to me for awards, you know, taking your team to the playoff is going to always put you in a better, you know, a better advantage.
And he had some very big playoff hits.
Oh, that, I mean, that grand slam.
Do they do the voting in the MLB before the playoffs?
Yeah, that.
That didn't happen. But still, I mean, big hits down the stretch for the Braves.
I mean, that grand slam is the most exciting thing to happen in that new stadium that I can ever recall. I've never been more jacked for a home run. Probably since Chipper's home run, you know, to beat the Phillies is probably the last time that I've been that excited for a home run.
I was there, and something told me. I was like, let me record. I was like, nah, something can't happen that good. I didn't record.
Do you think he's deserving, Derek?
I mean, what I've seen, yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
I mean, it wasn't even close.
Yeah, he's just a true superstar. Again, you know, they definitely need to pair him and Freddie up with one more, you know, solid free agent, and we're just so close. I mean, you know, I know I'm the biggest Braves fan out of all of us, and you just don't know. I mean, it's just I'm begging. We're knocking on the doorstep, and I want to see him move forward instead of sticking around. We, you know, sticking around got us 90 wins and whooped out of the first round of the playoffs. Now rebuilding is over. Now it's time to take the next step, get your free agents, and then, you know, move on and start competing with the better teams like the Dodgers, the Red Sox, and stuff like that. So, you know, we're still a few players away from that, but he definitely brought the excitement of the, of the young youth movement of the Braves this year. But also, Brian Snitker got manager of the year for the Braves. 90 wins for the Braves this year, improvement of 18 games from the last year. So happy for Brian Snitker. Everybody assumed he was just going to be an interim manager when he was named. He's been in the Braves system, I think, since 1978 or 77 or 78. He's been a coach in the Braves system, finally got the manager's job, and has ran with it. The players really, really love him. I believe he got 17 of the 30 votes for manager of the year. What was that?
17 out of 30.
Yeah, 17 out of 30 for manager of the year. Another well-deserved win. I didn't think there was anybody that, had the talent that he had and was able to put it together a year quicker than we all thought it was going to be. Craig Counsell of the Brewers, you know, he finished second, and, you know, he did a fantastic job too. But it just, you know, again, when you do something before you're supposed to do it and your players talk to you, you know, talk about you in the way that they used to talk about, you know, Bobby Cox back in the day, about how, you know, they want to play for you, and you know, they love him, you know, and essentially that's why, you know, he's still around, wasn't named just an interim manager and just got the contract extension. So, you know, they definitely we'll definitely look into that. So, but I forgot one thing though that I did want to ask you, Phil, because, you know, going back to the Hawks, John Collins, can you give us a quick injury report on him, please?
Yeah, so last night on NBA TV, John Collins appeared. You know, John Collins loved doing TV and all that. He said he's feeling really good and he's really close. I remember about a week ago, I saw something that he could make his return during the West Coast trip. So I think, if this is purely speculation, I think he'll be back on Monday for our home game versus the Clippers. So definitely it will be great to see him back. And if you remember, him and Trae Young had really good chemistry in just one preseason game. So we could see Trae Young's assist number go up a one or two. And if he can do that, if he can average 9 assists in his rookie year, that'll be like second in the NBA. I mean, that's incredible. Imagine when we get a real team.
Do you think he'll be on a minutes restriction
when he comes? They'll ease him in. But with the way Plumlee and Len and Deadman have been playing, you know, it won't be too bad. It's not like last year when we were just going crazy.
We were begging for a center.
We were begging for Plumlee to get taken out the lineup. And I think he heard our begs because he went in the gym to work this summer.
It'll be interesting, or not interesting, it'll be better to see Ben's coming off the bench and not having to put in the 20 to 22 minutes, maybe keep him a little bit fresher at that 15.
I think Vince Carter has been playing better since Omari replaced him in the starting lineup.
I agree. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it just, again, with him, it's all about them fresh legs. You know, you're getting up there in age and, you know, you start going, you know, start getting into that, you know, 10 minute stretch. And, you know, especially for the last couple of years, I think he's only averaged about 15 minutes. So, you know, he's definitely seen an uptick in the minutes, but, so it'd be nice to have him, you know, have him coming off the bench. Cause I do think he can be a solid bench piece for us. I mean, you know, but just should never be used as a starter this, you know, at this point in his career. So, but, all right, so let's skip ahead and go to the Georgia Bulldogs. Georgia handled Auburn 27-10 at home. Who gets your game ball this week, Derek?
DeAndre Swift for sure. I mean, he played amazing. I mean, he was the reason we blew out that team. I mean, his impact on the team that day was just amazing. And, I mean, you got a good game from Elijah Holyfield. He also racked up 93 yards rushing. And, I mean, DeAndre Swift had 186 yards rushing, and then he added 43 on receiving. And, I mean, I think that's how we need to use him. We need to make sure he's more involved on the passing game too. And I think, like, they just got to keep playing like that and to have a chance to battle at the end.
Who's getting your game ball, Phil?
Definitely got to stay with Swift. That was a big game from a grown man.
Yeah, I'm going to make it the trifecta. I mean, Swift was fantastic. I mean, the running game is the key to Georgia going anywhere. And because it allows Jake Fromm to be able to throw in passes here and there, it opens up the offense. You know, it just seemed that, you know, Swift the last two games has been as good as I've seen him this year. But he really seems to be cutting well, getting through, you know, each hole in the offense. And, you know, the props to the offensive line, too. The offensive line was great. There was some really, really good blocks for him to be able to get free on there. The game against LSU that we lost, Fromm was just seemed like he was sacked left and right. You know, it's a poor, poor game by the offensive line. And ever since that game, the offensive line has been fantastic.
And it's impressive, too, because a lot of injuries has happened. I mean, we've had a new center. He's had to come in and out because of injuries. And the offensive line is beat up, but they're still performing at a high level.
Yeah, it was just good to see. You know, I think that, you know, if you know, when we play Alabama in the SEC championship, if we can't establish the run there, you know, it's going to be over by the second quarter.
We have no chance if that happens.
Mm-hmm. So now this week, we're going to play UMass at home. Any chance Georgia pulls a Falcon and overlooks UMass?
No.
I can't see that happening either. I mean, I couldn't tell you one thing about UMass, but one thing I can tell you is that they're not beating the Georgia Bulldogs this week. You see any letdown, Phil?
Yeah, nah. You know, shout out UMass. That's my old stomping ground up there in my first 5 years of life. But, no, this is not the NFL. The talent is not even throughout the top to bottom. No, they're going to win, and they're going to win big. And we should see some extended – Justin Fields' time.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that.
That's what I want to
throw the ball.
I agree.
He actually did get to throw the ball in Auburn.
When I saw UMass on the schedule, to begin the year, I thought the same thing. I said, this is going to be the chance to get us, you know, to see Justin Fields get that game time action. And, you know, I'm hoping to see him the entire second half. They should rest from for Tech and the SEC championship game. So, you know, if they're not playing Fields, something is seriously wrong. You know, either the score or, you know, Kirby just maybe just doesn't have the confidence in him. But, you know, this is the game we definitely want to see him playing, getting used to being, you know, the, you know, under the center, calling plays, let him pass a little bit, you know, because mainly we've just seen him run wildcat and, you know, just do nothing but run the ball. But I know he has a cannon of an arm too, so I'd like to get to see that, you know, get to see that shown off a little bit too. But, you know, the only good thing for UMass is they're getting paid a lot of money to come to Georgia and lose. So, because I don't think, you know, I tried looking back in records and I couldn't find anything that we've ever played UMass. So,
yeah, I don't remember.
All that I could guess was that they got into a deal with Georgia for basketball, and it included them, you know, included them getting to play us in football as well. That's usually how that works when you run into agreement with them. It's usually they want to play you in another sport, but they're like, come get your butt kicked in football while you're at it too. And they're like, $3 million. Why not? So, all right. What's your final score prediction, Phil?
64-17.
What you think, Derek?
I'm good. I'm just going to say 34-10.
Yeah, I'm at 55-7. I just can't. I don't know. I don't know much about UMass, but I'm gonna guess that they can't stop Swift and Holyfield.
Georgia like stopped scoring. Like it seems like they just stopped scoring. I swear we don't ever score more than 40.
Well, isn't that like Georgia sports in general?
Yeah.
You get ahead, you get 30 points, and it's like, we're done. It's cool. Come back. But yeah, you know, I'm hoping that's not the case though, because this should be an absolute slaughter. And you know, prove a point to Georgia Tech. Hey, you're coming to our house the week after. This is what you're gonna see going in. But next week, you know, when we do the podcast, we have a lot to talk about with the rivalry game. So, because yeah, I don't think it's gonna be.
You know, they're coming.
Yeah, it's not. You know, they're coming in red hot, and so it's gonna be interesting. Now is not the time for a letdown against Georgia Tech.
We don't have Mark Rigg no more. We'll be fine.
Yeah, yeah.
That's Miami's problem.
Yeah, definitely. All right, let's get to some buy or sell time now. Kind of just the thing we do here, where we cover the national news, but kind of do it in a game little way. So. Let's start with Kevin Durant and Draymond Green. Got into a verbal argument on the court that extended into the locker room over Draymond Green not passing the ball to Durant for the final shot, and instead like dribbled it off his feet and it goes out of bounds and they go into overtime. It's horrible drive down the thing. And ended with Draymond Green getting a one-game suspension. My question to you guys, with Durant being the premier free agent after the year, buy or sell Durant coming back to Golden State, Derek?
I'm going to just have to sell it because that's what I want. And I think signs are leading to that he wants to leave, not just because of like stuff like this. I mean, I don't think this was a big deal, the Draymond thing. I think it's just being overreported in the media. But, I mean, he wants that payday, and he's never really got it. He's always taken a little pay cut. So I didn't think he deserves a payday, and I think he'll go ahead and chase it this year.
Phil, what you think? Buy or sell on him staying with the Warriors?
Buy. I think, you know, about it at the end of the season, he would have won 3 championships. You know, he did what he came, he won. Now he's going to want to go back to being, well, with LeBron on the decline, he could probably claim if he goes back and is like the number one on his own team again, he could probably claim for a few years until he starts declining, the best player in the league. So I think he will go somewhere and be that team's megastar.
See, I'm going to buy him staying with, you know, Golden State. I think the actions of Golden State management by suspending Draymond Green shows that they want, you know, Durant to sign with them again. And I think – I think Durant still wants to add championships to the legacy before he goes to somewhere else and, you know, tries to, you know, take a team that doesn't have much of a chance. You know, very LeBron like, go win your titles, and then, you know, doing it that way. But, you know, I think that if he does go, it will be to either Brooklyn or the Knicks. I think if he stays and Seattle gets a team back, I could see him going back to Seattle. He's always shown a lot of love for the city of Seattle. And, man, I know that he would love to bring a championship to Seattle for basketball. But we're a long way off from that, and he's probably not even going to be around by the time that happens. So, but the next one is Coach Mark Richt. Ah, poor Coach Mark Richt. He has suffered another loss as a coach at Georgia Tech, this time with Miami. Buy or sell Mark Richt, Phil?
Sell. I just think he can never win the big games in Georgia. You know, Georgia always has a very talented squad. He never had the top recruiting classes. And I mean, come on, you're in Metro. Well, you're on the outskirts of Metro Atlanta, one of the best hotbeds for football and basketball and baseball. One of the best hotbeds for athletes anywhere in the world. And you couldn't bring home anything substantial during your tenure in Georgia.
Buy or sell, Derek?
I'm selling all the way. I mean, I thought when he went to Miami, I thought he would be a little better, but he's showing the exact same thing he did in Georgia. It's mediocre. And it's just a mediocre coach. I mean, he's gonna make your team good, but then when it matters or when you need something big, he's going to fail. And that's how he's been his entire career, from in Georgia in and out to Miami.
I'm selling Mark Richt. I've been a Mark Richt hater since I've been here. And I just, you know, I hated that everybody here in Georgia was accepting of 3 losses a year, but just going to the bowl game. You know, I hated that. I'm like, no. SEC is all about the SEC championship. You know, that's, to me, is how you define success. SEC championship first, national title second, which is, you know, because mainly you have to get through Bama to get to that SEC championship game, which a lot of people consider that to be the real national title game. But the difference is I don't think Miami is going to accept being like that 3 or 4 loss team like, you know, the University of Georgia did, because Miami brought him in for one reason, and that was to bring them the success that they had, you know, back in the, you know, the 90s, late 90s, early 2000s, you know. So, you know, they wanted the glory days of the U to be back, and he's not doing that. I mean, they, you know, choked off those, you know, the last 4 to end the season last year, and then they're headed down that same path. And it was a bad loss to Miami, or to Georgia Tech this week. But I don't, he just has a hard time winning at Tech to begin with. So I wasn't surprised by that at all. But yeah, I'm definitely selling Coach Mark Richt. And like I said, I've sold him from the beginning. I was so happy when they removed him and put in Kirby Smart. And you can just tell it's a different atmosphere. Kirby Smart is not accepting of any losses, you know. Even when they're winning, he's throwing fits on the sideline. And I want to see that in a coach. You know, I don't want nice Mark Richt anymore. I want mean Kirby Smart. So, but third one is the NFL has moved the Chiefs and Rams Monday night football game from Mexico City to LA after the field conditions were considered unsafe. I saw a picture of this. That field was ground up dirt and sod, and it looked bad. There was just no way somebody would have torn an ACL there. Buy or sell NFL games being played outside of the United States, Phil?
Sell. Because, you know, you already ask enough of these players. You give them some of those short week Thursday night games, Monday night games, all this and that. And now you want them to go on a 6-hour flight or 12-hour flight if they're a West Coast team going to London. So you're just asking so much of these players, and it's all about money, money, money. But I definitely got to sell. If you care about the player safety like you claim you do, why are you making these guys fly across oceans and fly across boundaries to play regular season games? Preseason, okay, I can understand. Maybe we could do a preseason series in London and Mexico and Canada or something.
But yeah, I think that's what they had done before was that they played a preseason game in Mexico City because and then you know they were able to fill the stands up like you put it. You know, it's all about the money, you know, and it was able to fill stands. But you know, again, you know, I don't know if you saw that picture, Phil, or not, of how the field looked, but I mean, it was atrocious. There was just no way they're playing. So it was nice to see the NFL step in and decide to move it out of Mexico City. But buy or sell, Derek?
Yeah, I'm going to go to sell too. I mean, I agree with Phil said. It's just a big old money grab. It is more money. It's more people coming in to watch their games, more money. And I mean, it's just, I don't think it's necessary, especially right now.
I'm going to sell right along with you guys. We're agreeing with each other a lot this week. I always thought the London games were, I hate the 9:30 starts to begin with. So I always thought the London games were only there because the owner of the Jaguars, Khan, was talking about buying Wembley Stadium for the longest time and, you know, moving Jacksonville over to London. So they wanted to establish that relationship with the Jacksonville.
Like, you're going to have a team go to, like, you can have teams go to London, 8 teams go to London a year and make the London team come to the U.S. 8 times? Mm-hmm. Like, that would be horrible.
Yeah, you know, it would be bad for Jacksonville because with the road teams, you could schedule them around a bye week. That's what they do now for London, is whoever goes to London has a bye week that next week. But your division, when you play within the division, you know, I don't know how the bye weeks work with that, but when was Jacksonville going to get a bye week every time they come to the States? You know,
that would just be totally unfair for them.
Mm-hmm. I don't understand
how that would ever work. Because I know even the NBA about 10 years back was talking about trying to get a team in London. Like, no, it would not work.
Yeah, the players association would never go for that. You know, Khan, he ended up dropping out of negotiations for Wembley Stadium anyway, so the Jaguars aren't going there. But it was looking pretty serious for a while that there may be, you know, maybe a team going there. But as far as the Mexico City game, that doesn't bother me as much. It's essentially just a West Coast game anyway. So and it's usually the LA teams that go there, so they're not having to travel very far. But
I mean, I definitely think Toronto and Mexico City could support a team.
Yeah. Toronto, you know, they that was seriously looked into as a, you know, even getting the Buffalo Bills franchise when Buffalo was, you know, a little bit of financial problems and stuff. There was a lot of talk about Buffalo getting, you know, or going to Toronto to play. I think it was half their home games in Buffalo and half their games in Toronto. That never came to fruition. That was a couple of years ago, but. I think the same thing. You know, why not go play in Toronto and then Mexico City for a game? So, but I mean, my thing is, if you're going to host a game, you know, not to use foul language, get your shit together. I mean, you know, that you have one job, you have one game to host, and your field looks that bad.
Yeah, because I mean, I'm sure they're not going to play the next soccer match. Whoever uses that stadium, I'm sure that grass is going to be completely replaced before the next match.
Well, supposedly from what I was reading was that they didn't even use they didn't plant the right grass for the stadium to even begin with. So with rain and everything coming through there, it just tore it up, you know? So
Atlanta United made the CONCACAF league. So we might be having to go down to Mexico and play some of those teams. So I wouldn't want our team playing on grass like that.
Okay. My next one is, Jimmy Butler finally got his way, got a trade to Philly. I'm not sure the package. I know Sarek was the big name.
In the second round, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a nice little package. I didn't think it was that great for Minnesota, but everybody knew Minnesota's hands were tied, so you're not going to get that great of a package when someone's in control like Jimmy Butler was of the conditions. But my question is, buy or sell the Philadelphia 76ers being championship contenders with Jimmy Butler? Phil.
I'm selling that thing, and I'm selling it for $1 million. I'm selling it on eBay. Absolutely not. Man, they don't have a bench. They don't have shooting. Their spacing is going to be – I don't know. I think this doesn't really even move the needle for them right now this year. This doesn't move the needle for them at all.
Buy or sell.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and sell that. Like Phil said, they have no shooters to complement their players right now. But there are people on the market that they could pick up, like Kyle Korver. I think he'll end up going there. But I don't know about championship contenders. But I think they'll be tough in the playoffs because Jimmy Butler just brings that edge to the team. And Embiid's looking amazing this year.
Yeah, I'm actually selling as well. I don't think they're championship contenders. I do think that this gives them a shot at the Eastern Conference Finals. It gives them a better chance against Boston. I still think that they're also, I think, one more star away. My boy Markelle Fultz, I don't know what has happened to him. He looks just lost. I saw him shoot a free throw the other day, and I'm just like, what? I watched this guy, you know, grow up at UW, and he, you know, just you could just see it on his face. He was a superstar. You could say it's the shoulder all you want, but you know, either something's still wrong with the shoulder, and they're not telling us, or something. Because the mechanics, when I saw him shoot that free throw, I was just like, what happened here? You know?
Don't worry. He said it slipped. It's all right. It just slipped.
he hasn't looked the same since he had that shoulder injury. So, but yeah, I just don't think they're a championship contender. But you know, Phil, you know, or what? I think either you or Phil said that, you know, about their edge. He's going to bring an edge to them that they didn't have before, and that I think is going to be the biggest thing that he brings to that team is toughness. You know. I like his game a lot. I think he was a good pickup by Philly for, you know, especially as cheap as I think that they got that, you know, got him for. So.
And I think Jimmy Butler is a good guy, a good teammate, and a good locker room guy. I don't like the narrative they tried to put behind him for what happened in Minnesota.
We saw it last year in Chicago, and we saw it this year. I mean, it's kind of becoming a trend. So.
Plus everybody wants out of Minnesota. Nobody wants to go to Minnesota. That is the dreadful capital of the world. I mean, you know, I can't count how many people that have ever signed with Minnesota. I think the only person that's ever talked good about him is Garnett. So, you know, and even he bailed. So, you know, just nobody wants to stay. I mean, I didn't realize how bad it was, I think, until I watched the Christian Laettner 30 for 30 and how, you know, when he got drafted by them, he's like, oh, man, you know. And then he said he went there and it was, oh, man, this place sucks.
Listen, like Milwaukee, Detroit, Salt Lake City. Imagine being a hot startup college star. And you get
drafted. He's just like, he was just like, there's literally nothing to do there. And then when it turns winter, it snows, so you can't go nowhere and do nothing then either. So I just laughed at how bad he said it was. But
we need to do a segment on a worst NBA cities lifestyle-wise.
I'm telling you, that'd probably be – I can't think of one worse than that. I mean, that's just – you know, I just can't imagine having to play there. No nightlife out there. No, you know, you go hunting. All right, we'll end buy or sell with the college football playoff rankings. This week, the rankings went unchanged for the first time in history. It's never happened, 1 through 10, where they've gone unchanged. buy or sell, Phil, being on the college football playoff committee? We're talking about you. Would you buy or sell you being on the playoff committee?
Sell. Y'all know I don't even watch that much football to begin with. I'd rather be on any other sport committee, not football.
Derek, buy or sell you being on the committee? You know, those decisions, those, you know.
I'm good. I'm gonna comment on their mistakes. I don't want people commenting on my mistakes because you're never gonna be able to get it right with at least somebody.
You know, I would sell it, you know, because for me, you gotta factor in A, fan base is being pissed off at you all the time. Two, money. You know, whose school are we gonna vote in that's gonna bring the most money to the NCAA? Cause I guarantee you they're in your ear saying, hey, you know. We have Central Florida over here that's undefeated, but then we got Ohio State over here that's got, you know, one loss. And, you know, but this year, so far they've made it pretty easy for them. I was a little surprised that Michigan, you know, has snuck in, but they've been consistent with it so far. There's no one really that I would argue, you know, shouldn't be in. You know, you could probably mix up the top 10, I guess, a little bit, but everybody's deserving. That's one thing about it this year is that the teams have been eliminating themselves. You're going to look at here pretty soon, Ohio State and Michigan, where one of those two are going to eliminate themselves. Alabama, Georgia could really shake things up, especially if Georgia wins that SEC championship. There's one day I wouldn't want to be on the committee because then you've got to decide, should we take them both? Do we take Alabama, who's dominated everybody but really hasn't played any contenders? You know, do we take that one loss Georgia because they won the SEC? You're almost forced to take the SEC championship winner, you know, at one loss. I can't imagine that they wouldn't take the championship winner. So it's going to make for an interesting thing. I bet they're hoping that Georgia Tech beats Georgia.
It's going to get crazy. It's going to get crazy the next few weeks.
Yeah, there's
rivalry week.
Yeah, there's going to be some good games. Washington State won again in pretty big fashion, so they're climbing quickly, you know, especially not so much in the BCS. But they're climbing up in both of the polls. They've got some ranked games. They got ranked games coming. They got Washington, their rivalry game, which is always, you know, always pretty huge. And then they got the Pac-12 championship game. So I can't see them moving into the top four unless some really big upsets happen. But
yeah, they don't control their own destiny. I think there's only about six teams stopping at Oklahoma that control their destiny.
Yeah, you know, but Oklahoma, you know, that's the thing, you know, is, you know, with them being that one loss team, they go into their championship then and they lose their, you need a whole bunch of losses for anything to happen. I mean, at this point in juncture with, you know, the 2 weeks coming through that, you know, 2 or 3 weeks coming through where, we can sit here and say, what if, but until we start seeing, you know, who loses, who wins, you know, really get an idea of, how things are going to shake up. And again, we're going to start to see, you know, teams separate themselves, especially, championship week. Rivalry week and the championship weeks are going to be, you know, two just monster weeks. I can't wait for college football here pretty soon, but you know, the Georgia just has to do what they need to do. You know, again, we said last week they had to win out, and I still think that for them to have any chance to do that, they definitely have to beat, you know, Alabama in the playoffs, or else they're going to make it really easy for the committee just not to drop them off and, you know, give Alabama that number one spot. So I'd sure like to have that one spot over Alabama, though, because, you know, Alabama's not falling further than two or three, so we wouldn't have to play them in that first game. It'd be a championship game scenario. So
my prediction, I'm going to have to say Clemson won. Clemson won. Who's number three right now?
Well, number three is Notre Dame.
Let's go. Clemson one, Georgia two, because they're gonna beat Bama. We're gonna go.
Beat them at what?
We're gonna go Michigan, Bama four.
That's cool. That's actually a good thing, Phil. What do you think for the top four?
Bama one, Clemson two, and does the rest really matter?
Yeah, I just don't think they got any chance of beating Bama in the SEC championship game. So I think it's actually going to be, yeah, you know, I am hoping because I want to see both. I want to see those two teams go at it again in the
championship. I don't want to see that. I don't want to see them play far.
Well, I'm actually, I think it's going to be Bama, Clemson, Bama, Clemson, Notre Dame, and Ohio State. Ohio State always finds a way to sneak their way back, and they're just slimy like that. And so, but the best part about that is I really want them at number four because there's nothing better to me than see SEC whoop the crap out of them and knock them out. So, so that's what I think. But all right, man, we pretty much covered everything. Let's do some ending shout outs. Phil, what you got?
Definitely. Well, I want to shout out first KSU. We're actually playing at SunTrust this Saturday. We play at SunTrust versus Jacksonville State. So a top five FCS matchup should be a great game. KSU has outscored opponents about 450 to 45 since the GSU game. So that should be a good one. And shout out everybody listening. Shout out all our supporters, all our writers, all our contributors. Shout out Game Time Radio. Friends, family, everybody. Man, shout out everybody. You know, it's a good world. Shout out everybody.
Who you shouting out, Derek?
Yeah, shout out everybody that watched. Keep tuning in. Keep giving us feedback. And make sure to give us some name suggestions.
Definitely name suggestions. I'm going to shout out everybody watching us. You know, this was a big leap for us to do this live instead of taped. And, you know, having you guys in chat and talking with us and showing us your opinion, you know, show us that love on Twitter too. We love to interact with the fans. Yeah. We do this. We do this for you. You know, that's why we're here. It's not for us. You know, yeah, we enjoy it too.
I got a lot to do right now.
Yeah. You know, we just love doing this. You know, we love talking Atlanta sports. We love to hear what you guys have to say about it. And so, you know, we definitely like any kind of feedback. So yeah, my shout out definitely is to you guys. And then shout out to the HQ crew. You guys are doing a great job and we appreciate it. So thanks for listening to the ATL Sports HQ live podcast. And we will see you guys next time.